This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show, and we're about to defend the Confederacy. I'm kidding. We're not actually going to defend the Confederacy. In fact, we're going to explain American history, the North, the South, the Confederacy. We're going to talk about why the communists do what they do, because they just did something else, destroying your history, creating a new one. We'll deal with that. Men and women racing in opposite directions, the GOP grabbing its ankles for the Democrats once again. All that and so much more coming up this hour on the world famous Jesse Kelly Show. I'm going to give you a warning. I'm not exactly sure what's in store for the rest of the show. And this is what I mean. In a half hour, we have Brandon Weikert coming on. He's going to break down some military stuff that I want you to hear. But as far as me for the rest of the show, I just told you, you just heard a Marine brother of mine just took his own life. I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to deal with that, meaning I don't know whether I'm going to be angry or whether I'm going to screw off even more. And I don't know that it can really go one of two different ways. So you're on the ride with me now. Buckle up and we're going through this together. I just want to once again remind you, get some help if you need help. You're not done living yet. Your mission is not over. Get some help, gentlemen. All right. Now, John Lewis. Who is John Lewis? You probably remember because he had a huge funeral, massive, packed funeral, people shoulder to shoulder when he died. He was a member of Congress. He always sold himself as a civil rights leader, and in his younger years, he certainly was, as so many of them do. In his later years, he just became a scum-sucking communist, not anybody leading freedom for anything, but always got to run on that I'm a civil rights leader stuff. And you probably remember not being able to bury your mother, your father, your grandfather, of course, all in the name of COVID, right? It was too dangerous. Oh, you can have a funeral, but only three people can show up and you have to stand 12 feet from each other. Those were rules for you. But John Lewis died and COVID-19 once again went to the sidelines so they could have a massive memorial type funeral for John Lewis. These pictures of his funeral are still available all over the place online if you'd like to see what I'm talking about. I just want to remind you, as you look at those pictures, hopefully you're not driving. You weren't allowed to bury your mother. That's what the elites did when a member of the system died. So that's not the story we're talking about now. In Georgia, there was a city park. And in this city park, there was a Confederate monument. It had been there since 1908, a Confederate monument. The monument was torn down. It was torn down in 2017 during all the St. George Floyd riots that happened afterwards. And now they're building a John Lewis statue in the exact spot where the Confederate monument stood. And the reason I'm bringing up this story is we haven't had one of these conversations in a while, and it can be difficult for a normal person, a decent person, a good person, to have a conversation about this, to argue about this. And you should understand, if it's hard for you to defend leaving up the Confederate statue, not tearing it down, not replacing it with the John Lewis statue, if that's hard for you, if it would be uncomfortable for you to have that conversation, you should know that that just makes you a normal person. Doesn't make you bad. It doesn't make you stupid. It doesn't make you weak. It makes you a normal person. But you should also know this. You must understand this. The communist knows that. He knows that it's difficult and uncomfortable for a normal person to defend leaving up a Confederate monument No one wants to be called a racist or thought of being a supporter of the Confederacy or however they want to classify that. And the communist, as he does all the time and as he does so well, he uses those values of yours against you. You must get that that's what he does. You have to understand his motives. You have to understand he does that on purpose. And you also have to understand this. The American communist does not care about John Lewis. He doesn't care about civil rights. He doesn't care about the Civil War. He doesn't care about the North, the South. He doesn't care about any of these things. In fact, he really doesn't care about anything at all. He cares about the revolution. The communist is on a mission. You are trying to live your life, go to work, raise kids, be a good dad, be a good mom, be a good kid, find a job, make ends meet. You're living a normal life. He is fighting a revolution. And because you understand he's fighting a revolution, you must always find the motives behind why he does what he does. He's fighting a revolution, and nothing else matters but the revolution. He will therefore use your values against you to fight that revolution wherever he can fight it. And what is the purpose of the revolution? What is he trying to do? He believes the world itself, all of it, every single part of it, is evil and wrong and unjust and unfair. And in order to bring about the world he wants, he must tear everything down. It's not limited to statues or the Confederacy or education or the business world or the money system or the border or foreign policy. It's not limited to anything. Everything is part of an existing power structure that is inherently evil, according to the communist. He is trying to demo the building from its very foundations. He's trying to burn it all, bring it all down in order to do good. He believes his revolution against all existing systems, it is a good thing, and that he is a good person, and anyone and anything trying to hold him back from the revolution, they are the enemy. They are the problem. It's why he has such a loose relationship with the truth. Dome, did you see what Dome came out today and said? Dome came out. This was her previous comments, I should
know. To suggest that we have to build a wall across our southern border because there are terrorists who are trying to invade the country. It couldn't be farther from the truth.
Dome came out today in support of the border wall. What? How could she do that? What, such an obvious flip-flop. How could she do that? This is why.
I think our reverence for the truth might have become a bit of a distraction that is preventing us from finding consensus and getting important things done.
Truth? You're worried about accuracy? You're worried about the truth? We're fighting a revolution here. We have a higher cause, a higher calling. We're not going to be held back by things like the truth. We just lie. Which brings us to Confederate monuments. Remember when they started tearing them down after St. George Floyd died? Remember how I used to go off about that on the radio? How I used to scream at the low-T GOP for how much it was grabbing its ankles in the midst of a cultural revolution? Because that's what the communists are doing. They're fighting a cultural revolution. Do you remember that? How James Low-T Lankford, of course, he would lead the charge on this. Oklahoma United States Senator from one of our reddest states, while the communists were fighting a revolution, trying to tear down statues, rename military bases, the GOP, and I'll get back to more on the GOP. The GOPers like James Lankford couldn't grab their ankles fast enough when it came time to side with the communists. Well, I do think it is. Oh, here he was. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
This week we've seen leading voices like General David Petraeus saying it's time to stop having military bases named after Confederate generals like Braxton Bragg. Is it time?
I do, actually. I think the right way to be able to do this is to be able to have a study, to be able to look at where the name come from, what do we need to have to be able to take a serious look at it, and then to be able to transition. There are lots of great leaders, military leaders that are around the country that are modern leaders that we can continue to be able to honor.
GOP couldn't run cover for the communists fast enough during their communist revolution. So let's again discuss why this stuff happens, why it matters, and why, when the communists propose tearing down a statue, even if someone icky you don't like, the appropriate response is not only no, but I think I'll build more of them. You ready for that talk? Good. You ready for pure talk? Are you ready to save some money? I actually got a wonderful message last night. Hold on. I'm doing this impromptu, so give me a second. I'm pulling this up. I got a wonderful message from a listener last night. He said, thank you for the Pure Talk recommendations. I'm on Social Security and disability, and I can't make ends meet. I was using AT&T. I just can't afford AT&T, so I called Pure Talk, spoke to a sales rep, and mentioned your name. Next month, I'm switching over to Pure Talk. It's going to save me so much money. Thanks again. I love your show. You want to save a pile of money? Stop supporting an evil garbage company like Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. Switch to a patriotic cell phone company on the same 5G network. You don't even sacrifice service. All you do is save money. Switch to Pure Talk. Dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. #250, say Jesse Kelly. Now's the time. Make the switch.
Fighting for your freedom every day.
USA! USA!
The Jesse
USA!
Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Tuesday. Don't forget, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Now, back to our conversation about tearing down Confederate monuments, the defense of those Confederate monuments. Realize what the communist does and why the communist does it. He wants to, as I mentioned, he's fighting a revolution. He's trying to tear down everything, all the systems, the structures of the world. They're all evil and terrible, and they must all be torn down. But he understands that's not going to be a popular stance with the people who live within those systems, especially people who are having any level of success or happiness in those systems. He understands that's not popular. So how do you sell revolution? Well, one of the ways you sell revolution is you kind of use these benign phrases. You know, a great example of this is Kamala Harris's favorite phrase. What is it? Remember, we've made fun of her a million times. To see what can be unburdened by what has been. Sounds so flowery and collegey, right? But what's she saying? Unburdened by what has been. That's just a little plant there. Hey! Everything you've ever known, everything you know and love, it's such a burden. Let me destroy it all. And then you can see what can be the utopia. When Pol Pot took over Cambodia, he declared it to be year zero. Tore down all kinds of Cambodian history. There's nothing before this. I've torn it all down. Now let me build for you a wonderful future as I massacre 25% of my population, which he did. Mao did this in China. It wasn't just the graves. He went to Confucius. Everyone's heard of Confucius, famous philosopher. Mao had his thugs go tear up the Confucius grave site. Buddhist temples burned to the ground. Monks executed. Stalin, Lenin, both of them, renaming cities, renaming streets, renaming town squares. Renaming things, tearing down everything so the Russian people don't ever have to think about that Russia of old. There was no Russia of old. If they can tear down your history, whether it's good or bad, whether you're proud of it or whether you hate it, if they can eliminate it, take it out of your mind, then they can build for you whatever future you want, because your history is your DNA. It's part of what makes you you. So if I show up at your home and I want to burn down your home, I can't just show up with a can of gas and a handful of matches, because you're going to tell me, no, I like it here. But if I am allowed to worm my way into your home, and then just slowly but surely over time, I start to manipulate the history of your home. I start to take down those family pictures, even that one of Grandpa you don't particularly like. I start to depersonalize your home. It's not really yours anyway. You don't have memories here. I've taken those away. This is just drywall and wood and foundational stuff. It's a little bit of paint. Just let me burn it. Why can't I burn it? You see, it's not personal to you. If I do this for long enough over time, you'll be so much more understanding and accepting of my desire to burn down your home. That's why they took down a Teddy Roosevelt statue in New York, Christopher Columbus statues across the country, Jefferson's home, which used to be a place you could go visit and learn about Jefferson, has been completely remade into a shrine for slavery, calling Jefferson an evil slave owner, and Robert E. Lee, and you name the Confederate base or statue, all torn down, all remade, all reimagined, now that we are unburdened by what has been. Now we see what can be, of course. And so I don't give a crap what you think about the Confederacy, the North, the South, the Civil War, but more importantly, for our purposes, for this conversation, you have to understand the communist also doesn't give a crap. He doesn't sit around stressing about the Confederacy or slavery or any of these things. He sits around stressing about what he has to do to get you to step aside and let him burn down your home. How can he get you to let him do that? Tearing your history apart. Teaching you your country's evil, horrible, racist, misogynistic, genocidal, teaching you that your home sucks is a central part of his plan to see what can be, unburdened by what has been. This is how they think about you and your history.
We can't just worry about protecting democracy. In this moment, we've got to reimagine it with people that look and love like us at the center. And I think for us right now, it's about reimagining freedom and this American story in a way that is more revolutionary than what our founders actually put down on that little piece of paper, but instead is the type of democracy that is by and for all of the people of this country. That's the opportunity that we have.
That's Kelly Robinson, she is the head of one of the most evil organizations on the planet called the Human Rights Campaign. A lot of the corporate woke filth you see, it's courtesy of the Human Rights Campaign. But did you hear what she said? Right off the bat, she said it a couple times.
We can't just worry about protecting democracy. In this moment, we've got to reimagine.
We have to reimagine it, you see? We're just reimagining a new future for your home. Let me take those pictures of Grandpa off the wall. We can't reimagine the future with Grandpa there, can we? That's what they're doing to your country. All right, let's find out what they're doing to the Navy, the military. Brandon Weikert joins us next.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Tuesday, and it's time to do something I can't stand. We have to dig into the Navy. No, I'm kidding. You know what I've said many, many times before. As much as it pains me to say it, there is no more important military branch for a country that has two oceans on its borders, the United States Navy. We need a good one. We need a strong one. And it looks like they have fallen on some hard times. Joining me now, my friend, national security analyst, Brandon Weikert. Okay, Brandon, we touched last night on some naval vessels being sidelined, some support vessels, because we simply don't have enough sailors to man the daggone things. But you write about this in a lot more depth. What's happening with the United States Navy?
Well, basically, we are being stretched and strained to our breaking point. We have a series of conflicts that are dragging the Navy all across the world, you know, from Europe to the Middle East and all the way to Asia. But the problem is, as you know, we don't have enough personnel anymore, and we don't have enough ships available to meet all of these simultaneous threats. So we're having to pick where we're going to send those ships. And wherever we send them, we have to pull them from another part of the world, like Asia. And that means that when the U.S. Navy is away from Asia, China is going to try to take the South China Sea, which is what they're doing.
Okay, let's pause on the U.S. Navy for a moment, because I want to make sure everyone has a clear view on world events and world things. The South China Sea. Brandon, I'm a moron. I just got back from a trip to Neptune. I don't understand why China is involved at all or interested in the South China Sea and what our role is there. Give me the South China Sea 101 breakdown, please.
Yeah, so basically, under international law, multiple Asian countries have certain amount of territory in the South China Sea. The Philippines literally is in the South China Sea, so they have a large amount of territory. There is a lot of natural gas deposits there that, of course, China wants to dominate. Also, a massive amount of the world's oil supplies go to and from Asia by cutting through the South China Sea. So if you can dominate the South China Sea, you can basically, you know, have control over a large amount of oil that's passing through those waterways. Lastly, whoever controls the South China Sea controls the southern passes into Taiwan. And obviously for China, that's a big deal. They want to be able to choke Taiwan off. This is why they're going after the South China Sea. It's why they're also going after those small islands, the Senkaku Islands, in the East China Sea. They can control those two waterways. They can then strangulate Taiwan, which is what they're trying to do.
Speaking with Brandon Weikert, and I swear we are going to get back to the Navy. I just want to make sure everyone is clear on world events, because this stuff does actually matter. Okay, Brandon, can you explain what you mean when you say they're going after? They're going after this. They're going after that. Because I follow the news every day. I know everyone listening does as well. I don't see shots fired. No one's shooting missiles over there. There's no bombs being dropped. What do you mean going after?
They're basically moving. The Chinese are moving their Navy, and they're usually using their Coast Guard to basically push out with water cannons, as ridiculous as it sounds, Philippine vessels in Filipino territory. And then they are basically laying claim to that territory when it's been cleared. And they're sending in, for instance, permanent bases, or they're sending in oil rigs to drill illegally, and they're basically trying to establish their dominance in the region. The U.S. Navy traditionally helps to prevent that from happening, but with the Navy being so understaffed, not having enough ships on hand, they're having to divert limited resources that our Navy is to, say, the Middle East. And when they do that, that leaves a massive opening for China to really run roughshod over their neighbors, which is what they're doing.
That's all really terrible. Okay, Brandon, why is the Navy, why are they stretched so thin? Meaning, I am a World War II buff, as every man over 40 is, and I remember a time, or at least I've read about a time, I wasn't alive, when the U.S. Navy was, we spanned the high seas, my friend, all of them. We were all over every one of them. Has the Navy shrunk that much, or are there just more conflicts now?
It's a little bit of both, but really the big issue here is that the Navy is the smallest size it has been since the interwar years, and that's the couple decades between World Wars I and II. Of course, the difference between then and now is that back then we had what's known as latent industrial capacity, so we could surge production as needed, and we also had a population that was willing to serve. Today, we don't have an industrial base because we sent it all to China, so we can't surge capacity when we need to build more warships. And we also have a population that's deeply divided. And let's face it, most of us are overweight. We wouldn't even be able to get in the military anyway. So we have a big problem with that as well.
Brandon, could you lay out for me the quality of the ships we have in service, because that is one thing that even a dumb grunt like me understands. The advancements in naval technology. I mean, you can have a ship, the best ship in the world in 1910, and in 1930, you would get swept off the seas without putting a scratch on another ship. That's just the way naval advancement works. How advanced are we?
We certainly have technological dominance in critical areas. The problem is we don't have enough of these systems, and we're seeing that now play out. And so even with, let's say, the Gerald R. Ford class aircraft carrier, $13 billion to build, it is literally the most sophisticated piece of equipment any military has, yet it can be sunk. And it will be sunk if it goes up against Chinese anti-access area denial, A2AD, capabilities. And these are the systems that the Chinese plan to use to basically keep our carriers and our airplanes out of range, because if we get too close, the Chinese A2AD systems can just overwhelm whatever sophisticated defenses one of our carriers have and can either destroy their flight deck, rendering them useless, or even worse, sink the carrier itself. And so, yeah, we've got the best technology possible, but we don't have enough of it, and it's too expensive to build more. And like I said, from an industrial standpoint, we can't mass produce anymore. And one other thing, the systems we do have, a lot of them are suffering through wear and tear because the shipyards can't even maintain the ships we have. So they have to go out longer and without going for maintenance. And delayed maintenance, as you know, with any car, for instance, deferred maintenance is a killer. It's even worse with a multi-billion dollar warship.
Brandon, this system the Chinese have, I'm assuming, now this is a huge assumption, and I know you'll tell me if I'm an idiot, I'm assuming this is a long-range, perhaps hypersonic missile system, and the area where the ships can't go, that's the range of the missiles, but that was a big guess. Am I right?
Jesse, you are 100% correct. You've been doing your reading. Yes, 100% correct on that. The Chinese are incorporating hypersonic vehicles. The whole system is designed. They know the range, for instance, of our carriers and how close the carrier needs to get the aircraft on board within firing range. So their systems are designed to keep those carriers just over the horizon so that the aircraft on board are basically useless. Similarly, they plan on targeting, for instance, our bases in Okinawa, our bases in Guam, and knocking out the airstrips there so that we can't launch from land bases nearby. So basically, everything within that kill box is going to get destroyed no matter how technically sophisticated our systems are.
Brandon Weikert, I would highly recommend you go read the stuff he writes. It certainly makes me smarter. My brother, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Talk to you soon.
I know that was a lot. I know that was foreign policy stuff and it was technical stuff, but that is the stuff, that minutiae, maybe that's the wrong word, it makes it sound small. The little details like that, that's the stuff that makes huge differences. It wins and loses wars. In fact, I'm going to expand on that really, really briefly. Maybe I'll even do a little brief little World War II talk in just a moment before I do that. Look, we're about to discuss World War II, and you know what that means. Your testosterone levels need to be high because there's nothing that raises T levels in dudes or tests T levels in dudes like talking about World War II. That's why you need a male vitality stack from Chalk in your body. Male vitality stack. Oh, guess who's a brand new customer? Jewish producer Chris. This thing, the difference in how you feel. Fellas, are you down? Depressed a lot? Inexplicably? You know that could very well be a testosterone thing, right? Your T levels get low, you're down. Your energy levels get low, you're down. Ladies, they have a female vitality stack for you. You don't have to be out of gas and chugging another cup of coffee at 4 p.m. You can just feel good. Go to CHOQ.com, promo code Jesse. Chuck.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
I like it.
Returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Tuesday. Remember, if you want to email the show, you can. Jesse at JesseKellyShow.com. Still more than an hour left. I want to finish up this conversation I was kind of teasing after we just got done with Brandon Weikert there. So he was talking about naval power, and he was discussing China, hypersonic missiles, and range and things. And I want to break this down in a way that you can understand better, having just read so much about this crap. I know a lot of it seems obvious, but warfare is a wild thing. And it sounds very, very simplistic. And it is very simple, but it's critical to be able to hit them before they can hit you. I know everyone's rolling their eyes saying, yeah, thanks, Captain Obvious. But one of the main techniques King Philip II used to conquer all of Greece, this is Alexander the Great's father, I should note, is, you know how they always fought in a phalanx and had these long spears? He just made his spears even longer. I know that's crazy, but Macedonia, where he was from, they had incredible timber. He had the ability, he had the supplies necessary to do it. And if your army is outfitted with 20-foot spears and the other army's outfitted with 9-foot spears, then you can kill a lot of them before they get close enough to kill you. In World War II, in other instances, but in World War II, it's crazy if you pay attention to the huge naval battles that took place between the United States of America and Japan, how much the commanders on both sides understood the importance of range. We need more range. Range matters. One of the main benefits Americans had over the Japanese was radar. But even later in the war, when you look at huge things like, what's a good battle example of this? A Battle of the Philippine Sea is actually a great example of this. Battle of the Philippine Sea. There's a lot to it. I'm not going to go into a bunch of history of it, but one of the things that gave us such a huge advantage was the Japanese had radar by this point, but it wasn't as good as ours. So our radar, I'm making up these numbers. Do not take these details. I don't have them in front of me. I'm making up these numbers. But our radar, we would show the Japanese 100 miles away. If the Japanese were 100 miles away, we knew where they were. We knew roughly how many they were. Japanese radar showed us 50 miles away. Now, this is radar. It's not bombs and bullets and planes and aircraft carriers and sexy things. The difference in that is war-changing. Monumental difference. Because we know where they are. We can launch our planes before they can launch their planes. We have the ability to hit them before they can hit us. We can hit them before they can hit us. When it comes to our conflict with China, how many times have I warned you about a carrier going to the bottom of the Pacific? How many times have I talked about what that's going to feel like, what that's going to look like? No, I don't think we're about to go to war with China, so I'm not trying to freak you out. But I am trying to tell you, if we do, if a conflict sprouts up over there, this won't apply to over here. I'm talking about their defensive systems over there. They can hit us before we can hit them. They can launch missiles that can send our carriers to the bottom of the Pacific before we can even launch our planes to go hit them or hit their missile sites. What that does effectively is neuter you. I don't care how powerful your carrier is, how incredible the jets on these are, how amazing our naval aviators are. None of these things matter. You can have the fanciest, best carriers and jets and aviators and destroyers and cruisers and battleships and all the other things that go in your Navy. If those things can be sunk by a singular missile before you get into the range to attack them back, then you might as well send out a fleet of tugboats on it with monkeys manning the oars, because it's going to do as much damage to their to their navy, to their forces, as a big fancy aircraft carrier with jets. This is what I've been warning about the crumbling of a global empire, and it's happening so many different places. You see a little bit here and a little bit there, and the stories in and of themselves almost seem small. They're not small. Do you remember during Obama's presidency? Do you remember when Iran captured an American naval vessel and took a crew of sailors hostage? Iran flat out grabbed a ship, held our sailors hostage. They even put the little garments on the women's heads, on the female sailors' heads. It wasn't world-changing. It was an outrage for 24 or 48 hours at the time, but it wasn't world-changing. It didn't stop the presses. But that's the kind of thing that never used to happen, ever. We used to have the finest damage control crews on the planet when it came to our Navy. That's the unsexy part of naval combat. Everyone wants the jets and the torpedoes and the missiles and the depth charges and things like that. Putting out fires and fixing damage is everything because your ship is going to take damage. We used to have the best on the planet. Other militaries would come from around the world to learn how America did damage control on our naval vessels. Today, they burn while sitting in ports in San Diego. Remember? What was it? The Bonham, I believe it was? Went down sitting in a port. It took them, if I remember right, 10 minutes to even figure out how to turn on the fire alarm. How bad is that? It's bad. Sounds small. But when the rubber meets the road, it won't feel small anymore. It'll feel big. Anyway. All right. Speaking of the military, GOP grabbed its ankles for the communists again. Hang on.
This is an iHeart podcast.